Hi, I'm Rich Shea, and this is the Play Board Games Better podcast, episode 1, October 25th, 2010. The purpose of these podcasts is to teach the listener how to play board games, or Euros, better than they do now. Almost everyone can improve their playing and winning ability. I am not the best player in the world, but I think I can teach you to play better. I am sure that I can present information and interviews that will improve your gameplay. Unfortunately, much of this information will still require you to think about what you are doing while playing, and perhaps even engage in some self-examination. If that seems like too much effort for a hobby, I still hope you will find these podcasts entertaining. I will produce one podcast per month. The first few will be fairly general, but I will have interviews with some of the strongest players that I know, especially players who excel at more than one game. They may not give away their top secret strategies, but they will talk about how they became better gamers and how they think about the games they are playing. Later podcasts will focus on the play of specific games. We will cover the most popular and competitive games people play. Even if a game covered in a podcast is not your favorite, I hope you will tune in to see how excellent players approach these games. Perhaps you will even remember enough to avoid making the most common errors if and when you do play the game. So why is winning important? Almost everyone likes to win, and a few people are obsessed with it. As much as I like to win, I am more interested in how a game plays. I judge a game by asking, am I enjoying playing? What I find is that if the game is not being played well, it isn't as much fun. Poor play takes away from my enjoyment of the game. Not that making a mistake is terrible, but I hope to see every player executing a plan, not making random moves. For this to happen, each player must have a good grasp of the rules. Yes, that is the first step to playing better, know the rules to the game. That's also the first bit of work. It's great when someone teaches the game well, and I owe a lot to excellent teachers like Rob Kircher. I'll plug his board game room at Total Confusion, the local competitive gaming event, later. They can get you up and running in a new game quickly, and everyone will have a great time. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't find and read the rules if you plan to keep playing the game. Reading the rules will give you a clearer picture of the game in most cases. There are a few notorious exceptions, but you can go to BoardGameGeek.com, probably just say BGG in the future, for summaries and rewrites of rules. Reading the rules reinforces what you were taught and forces you to try to fit the parts of the game together in your head. Reading the rules will also cover situations that won't come up in a teaching session. Soon after I learned to play Puerto Rico, I was in a tournament and realized that I didn't know if I could rearrange my buildings to make space for one of the bonus point buildings. In fact, you may rearrange the buildings. I wasn't confident enough to ask, more fool me, for fear of being labeled as bait and turned on by the other players. So rule one, read the game's rules. Make sure you understand them. You can ask someone if something doesn't make sense, or you can look on BGG. It's often a good idea to read the rules with the game set up in front of you. It's not a requirement, but often obscure language is made clear by one look at the board and pieces. Don't count on other people to be the rules expert. It is both lazy and limits your ability to improve. Besides, people make mistakes. I'm no exception. If several people have read the rules, the game is much more likely to be played correctly. Rule 2. Play against people who are better than you. I know that doesn't sound like an ego-building experience, but it is definitely worth it. And remember to pay attention to what they are doing and how they are beating you. Many games have a range of good moves that you will quickly pick up. This is especially true in games with bidding or many choices. There's usually no guidance on typical bids in the rules, and the examples in the rulebook might be very out of line with reality. But one game with experienced players will give you an excellent base. Even if you never become top dog against the best players you know, you will become a stronger player quickly. I'd avoid asking them a lot of questions during the game, but a few are okay. After the game, you should ask about the effect of one or two moves you felt were particularly weak or catastrophic on your part. And there are other reasons to play well. If you consistently play poorly or seem to not know what is going on in the game, people will be reluctant to play with you. Another issue is that you will probably play slowly compared to more knowledgeable players. This is an annoying habit. People will see when you have to make a difficult decision and allow extra time. But when you are just trying to get your brain fired up and everyone else knows what you should do, you're dragging the game down. Rule 3. Teach the game once you are familiar with it. One life lesson I've learned is that nothing solidifies understanding something better than explaining it to other people. As soon as you try that, you will see any gaps in your understanding of the game, and you will be motivated to fix them. I never refuse a chance to teach a game to other players. I consider it both a privilege and a duty, and frankly, good for me too. It's also a chance for me to know the game better. While explaining and playing, I have to think about what I'm doing and not teach bad habits or incorrect rules to the new players. Now, something about me. I've been playing games most of my life. I got serious about war games when I was 14. I started on the Avalon Hill Classics, and for many years I was pretty much just a war gamer. My son became a gamer around the age of 12, but he played and still plays Magic the Gathering. In fact, if you Google Richard Shea, S-H-A-Y, you are much more likely to see him than me. Although we played some games together as he grew up, a few years ago, we both expanded our horizons. Partly, this was so we could play more games together, and partly because we attend Origins. See www.originsgames.com, although it's not a competitive event, together, and Euros just became a bigger scene there as both wargaming and Magic events dwindled. I like heavier Euros, like Agricola and Le Havre, and wargame-like games like Age of Empires 3 and Struggle of Empires. In the end, I play any game that looks interesting and come back for more if I like it. Even more recently, I started attending Total Confusion, www.totalcon.com, in Massachusetts, the World Board Gaming Championships, www.boardgamers.org, in Pennsylvania, and EuroQuest, EuroQuest.GamesClubOfMD.org in Maryland. These events stress competitive gameplay, though there is plenty of open, friendly gaming. I've come to enjoy tournament participation quite a bit, and I've had some success. I appear to be a competent player of Puerto Rico, though my playstyle doesn't seem similar to other top players, and I don't feel that strong while I'm playing it. Today, for my very first interview, I went far afield and I'm interviewing my own son, Richard Shea.
We're working on a budget here.
Despite being a proud father, I can objectively say that Rich has much to share about competitive gaming. My son loves competitive play and attends Magic the Gathering tournaments regularly, competing at a high level, especially in the vintage format. He also comments online regularly in this area. His first year at TotalCon, he won chairman of the board and four regional titles. At his first World Board Gaming Championship, he finished second in Agricola. Rich is actually one of the better competitive gamers that I know.
Just ask my dad.
Well, or any of his associates. But he has a long history of competing in other games, and we'll ask him about that. So Rich, how did you get started in gaming?
Many years ago, once upon a time, my dad would play games with me. We'd play fun games like Warlock of Firetop Mountain comes to mind, and Wrasslin'. And when I was 12 years old, Dad introduced me to Magic the Gathering. I got introduced to this game that Dad had learned about in a business trip. He was excited to see a card game where people would drop cards onto the table from a distance, and it seemed like a lot of fun. So he got me a starter deck and a few booster packs, and things went on from there. So Dad and I have been playing games together, separately, on and off, for many years.
Well, why is competitive gaming important to you? You play a lot of competitions, and you have for a very long time, much more so than I have.
Sure. Competitive gaming is a lot of fun. It gives you something to strive at, to work hard in. It gives you a chance to excel. You can't get good at watching a TV show. And It's kind of hard to measure how well you're doing when it comes to something like writing or drawing. Competitive gaming gives you an outlet to play, to compete, to strive, and to do better than you did before. And it gives you an objective measurement of how well you've done.
Could you say what you think makes a particular game interesting in a competitive environment?
Well, there are a few forces that make a game interesting. On the one hand, if a game comes down to chance, it's not interesting. No one has tournaments of flip the coin and guess heads or tails. Because that wouldn't be interesting, because no one would care. You can't outplay people. The opposite end of the spectrum is chess. People play chess for a long time. There are chess tournaments, and a lot of people know how to play. And there's very little luck involved. You might go first, you might go second, but it's a very skill-intensive game. And it gives you the chance to consider what you're going to do. And then you have a game like Agricola, which is somewhere between chess and our mythological flip-the-coin game when it comes to skill and luck. One of the things about Agricola is that it often makes you think in new situations, and it uses that chaos, that entropy, to resituate its players in a way that makes them reevaluate situations maybe similar to what they've seen before, but not entirely the same.
So what games do you think you play best? Clearly Magic could be one of the games. You've won a lot of tournaments, and you have a pretty high rating in that. Magic, for those who don't know, has a rating system much like chess or bridge, and across several versions of the game.
I got second place at the World Board Game Championship in Agricola, so I guess I'm not as bad at that game as I am at some other games. I like Dominion. That doesn't mean I'm any good at it, but it's a fun time to play. Yeah, I think there are a lot of fun games, and they're always printing more.
So why do you think you play better in the games that you play well at, as opposed to maybe some of the other games?
Sure, well, everyone has their set of skills, and I think that maps to games. I think that, for example, if I were a lot taller, I'd be better at basketball than I am. But I don't have that particular height skill. Maybe if I were stronger, I'd be better at football, but it turns out I'm horrible at football. And so I think that there are some skills that you have and some that you might not have as much. For me, I lack any spatial sense. Games that are planar and actually leverage board position, as in, this is proximate to this, this is further from this, I'm not going to do as well in, as games that can better be represented by, say, just thinking about attributes for objects that aren't spatial.
So the graphics in Agricola don't actually have anything to do with your skill at playing. It's linking the ideas and concepts into a set of steps you're going to take.
Well, yeah, I think that one of the nice things about Agricola is that it has graphics and it has flavor, and that ties all the disjoint pieces together. If you try to imagine a game like Agricola that didn't have the starving German farmer theme, but instead just required accumulating different resources, trading different resources, I think your brain would spend a lot of time trying to keep all the pieces required together, because there wouldn't be any cohesion to tie them together. But because you have a unifying theme for the game, suddenly it makes sense, and your brain can naturally pick up the pieces. It's coherent, it's cogent. And so the art in Agricola and the flavor in Agricola really helps you.
In a game, even though it's a good game, like Through the Ages, the theme doesn't hang quite as well and actually makes it harder to play the game well.
One of the things that I've learned from Wizards of the Coast's own writing is how the theme of a game can help it connect in with itself. MagicTheGathering.com has long run a series of articles by Mark Rosewater, a lead designer in Magic, and a lot of those talk about the importance of flavor as a unifying piece to help make the components of a game make more sense. And I think that applies not just to Magic, but to other games as well.
Moving to something different and maybe more directly useful to people listening, what do you think is the most important skill or information that would improve typical players that you see?
A working knowledge of probability is important. That doesn't mean you have to be great at it, but being able to figure out what's more likely between two different scenarios is useful and how much more likely they are. Beyond that, I think that trying to get a feel for how the game's going to be in two turns from now as opposed to just this turn is important too. We were playing Macau yesterday, and one of the things that made it less exciting is that I generally knew two or three turns before a turn what I was going to do in that turn. But that's the only way to make that game work. Otherwise, you get stuck with people that you can't play in your tableau. So that prognostication, that looking ahead, that's also pretty important. And there's no trick to it. It's just thinking in the longer term as the game's progressing.
Is there one thing that you'd change about tournaments that you've been in? Especially in board gaming, the tournaments are not as finely tuned or set up as they are in Magic the Gathering or Chess or Bridge. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. In some ways it's good because less officiating is required. But can you think of a way that tournaments could be improved?
One of the problems with really some of the tournaments that I've been to is that those tournaments require playing in 2 out of 3 flights of a qualifier to make the finals. And I've even seen it such that if you play in a second qualifier and you don't do well, it's worse than having never played. So I dislike penalizing you for a failed attempt if you've already done well, because that discourages you from playing, and I don't think that's particularly good. But the problem with requiring that you play in 2 in order to advance to the qualifying round is that there are a lot of great games, and they keep printing more of them, and you only have so much time at a game convention. And it's valuable, expensive time. You've taken time off from work, you've taken time off from school, you're away from your family, and you're playing games. And if you really want to make the qualifier in a game, it's a lot to ask that you give up the time for the qualifier and the time for another qualifier. And so I would change that to have advancement be based on a single win, even if it adds another layer to the qualifying process. Because in the end, you're not actually adding an extra round that someone has to play if they can qualify off one round.
So you think a better format would be to have several qualifying heats, but that all the winners in all the heats advance?
I think that would be better.
And even if you do poorly in a heat, you could go to another heat and try to qualify for advancing. So if you wanted to invest the extra time, it would be because you hope to do better, not because you needed to go, otherwise you're not going to advance even if you've already won.
That's right. And I also think that if you have already advanced, if you've already won the first round, you shouldn't worry that a poor performance in a subsequent round of heats would reduce your chances of qualifying beyond what you would have gotten had you not even entered that heat. And I've seen that before, and I think that just discourages people from playing games they want to play.
That's a good point. That's all the questions we have for this one. We'll be bringing Rich back, because we're actually going to do a podcast on just enough probability. And I think Rich will help me out with that, because his probability skills are better than mine.
It's possible.
And then we're going to ask Rich to define something in our next podcast when we talk about the metagame. Thanks, Rich. I'll have other interviews in future episodes. I'm fortunate to be able to play against many very strong players in the Boston and Providence areas, and they have greatly improved my gaming experience and, I think, my playing ability. I hope to present a number of them to you over the next few months. Here's another gaming tip to mull over. Don't play the same game as everyone else. This tip is from Ryan Sturm. I heard it on the Dice Tower podcast. It's not universal, but it is a pretty good strategy in many games. If a few of the other players are trying to win with a certain strategy, you would be well advised not to compete with them directly for the resources they are pursuing. Instead, find a different way to get to the victory goals, especially if it might disrupt the more popular strategy. Even if the strategy is risky, it might be your best bet against players who are more experienced than you. You still have to know the rules well enough to judge among alternate plays, however. In Puerto Rico, most players win by shipping more goods or for more points than anyone else. An alternate strategy is to accelerate the game by focusing on buildings so the game ends with you filling your building area before the shipping engines are really in high gear. I've surprised very good players by doing this. It might even be possible to stun everyone by focusing on depleting all the colonists before the other players have their production engines going. Never attempted this, nor have I worked out a strategy to make it happen. It's just the other way to end the game and a different way to think about it. Critique of games for competition. Not all games that I like to play are really suitable for competitive play. That doesn't mean that you won't find them played in tournaments. You might even find me in those tournaments, but I'm just playing for fun. Of course, your views may differ, and some games I consider fairly random have consistent winners in tournament play. In each podcast, I'll discuss two games that I think differ in suitability as tournament games. There will always be games I enjoy, but not always the ones I would sign on for in a tournament. This time, I'll discuss two games that I think are at the opposite ends of the spectrum. Puerto Rico may be the poster child for tournament games. There is very little luck involved. Only the order of appearance of plantation tiles is random, and seeding in most games. At the World Board Gaming Championship Tournament, the semifinal and final rounds have a procedure to auction preferred seats by paying a victory point penalty for choosing seats. Third is the preferred seat based on many plays of the tournament. There tends to be a style of play based on shipping and getting a harbor built, and moves that interfere with that can be judged harshly by other players. The effect a player's action choice can have on the outcome causes complaints about the likelihood of a less experienced player giving the game to a particular player. But this is just something that happens in multiplayer games when you mix folks of different experience levels. In two-player games, mistakes made by one player can only benefit the single other player, and that's considered the essence of the game. In multiplayer games, the effect of any player error may mostly or completely benefit only one other player, most likely the player downstream or next after the person who made the mistake. Conversely, but less complained about, sitting downstream from an excellent player is usually harder on the closest downstream player. Puerto Rico will be one of the first games we explore later in specific game strategy discussions. At the opposite end for luck involved in tournament outcomes is, in my opinion, St. Petersburg. While it is a very popular game, and I enjoy playing it a lot, the standard version has a few overpowered cards, the Observatory and the Mistress of Ceremonies. Acquiring these cards, especially early in the game, offers a really significant advantage. Not that it can't be overcome, but if two players of equal ability, one has the Mistress of Ceremonies and the other doesn't, the Mistress of Ceremonies player will probably win. A revision to the game corrects these cards, but also adds another card that I believe is too powerful, Debtor's Prison. Even more sadly, the printing on the backs of the new cards is a very different shade of the color, which is just not acceptable in competitive play. I had to put card sleeves on the entire game. The result is that the original version is used for tournament play. The powerful cards don't guarantee victory. I've had Observatory be totally useless in a tournament final through bad draws four times in a row, but they give advantages that can't be counteracted and are disproportionate to their cost. Tournament play usually uses only the original version of a game, especially in this case, because relatively few people buy revisions and update kits. For some games, I think this is a serious handicap. For other games, the utility of expansions is subject to debate or infinite argument. So I'm here with Rob Kircher, and I mentioned him earlier in the podcast, and my longest time gaming buddy, Joel Feldman, who I didn't mention before, because we've been gaming for 38 years.
Yeah, close to 40.
I'm pretty sure. And going to Origins most of those years, too. So that's a long time gaming association, and we still talk to each other.
We broke our teeth on Kriegsspiel.
Yeah, that was the first one we played. Yeah. But we've soon moved on. But I mostly want to talk about TotalCon. TotalCon is one of my favorite competitive conventions. And really, in my mind, one of the chief reasons is Rob Kircher. Rob Kircher runs the board game room at the Total Confusion Convention. It's a lot of fun, and it's really well done. But first, I wanted to talk about TotalCon.
All right. Well, TotalCon this year is coming up on February 24th to the 27th in Mansfield, Mass. For board games, we offer usually about 70 different board games, and we also offer quite a few tournaments. We have the Settlers of Catan qualifier that the winner will get a trip to Gen Con. We also have the Puffing Billy tournament for the train game enthusiasts. We also offer 10 games that we call for the New England regional tournaments. And then we also have an overall board game championship for the best board gamer throughout the convention.
Rob tracks the stats on those things live and projects them on the wall. It's a really nice system, so everybody can keep the excitement high. There's also lots of fun open gaming. It's not just competitive events. There are demonstrations and teaching sessions, And this year, you have some special guests in the board game room.
This year, we're honored to have Tom Vassell and Eric Sommer of the Dice Tower will be joining us this year, playing various games and also playing Wits and Wagers and hopefully an Overlord tournament for Memoir 44 fans.
I'll bring my Uruk deck along, too. Maybe they'll want to play that. And Joel, you're looking forward to it, too, I assume.
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. I started off the first year I went, and just went for 2 days and had so much fun. Now I go for the whole convention, take time off from work, have a good time.
It's that good. You really ought to check it out if there's any way you can make it. And it's a time of year when there aren't as many other conventions going on. Okay. So look into it, www.totalcon.com on the web. If you have friends and family members who play other kinds of games, there's also miniatures, role-playing,
LARPs, and also we'll have collectible card games as well.
And collectible card games. So, whatever kind of gamers you're traveling with, there'll be something for them to do at TotalCon. I'll be in the board game room playing there, but there's lots of other ways to have fun. And it's a pretty nice hotel. It's not downtown or in an urban setting, but you can get there by public transportation. So even if you're not an automobile driving kind of person, pretty straightforward to fly or train or bus into Boston, and then take public transportation, and the hotel will pick you up from nearby.
And if you're driving, it's right off of 95, just a couple of minutes off of 95, so it's very easy to get to.
From anybody who's driving around New England, that's yes. True. It's quite convenient.
Well, thanks a lot.
Next time, we'll talk about how competitive you want to be and where it's appropriate to ease back. More importantly, we'll talk about how to watch yourself play and learn from your mistakes, and some outside-the-game behaviors to keep yourself in good shape while you're competing in tournaments. We'll have an interview with Rob Kircher. Aside from his game playing skills, Rob is an excellent game teacher and makes the board game room of the Total Confusion Convention both fun and home to a set of well-run tournaments. If you'd like to sponsor a podcast or have one of your games featured in a recon session or an upcoming strategy discussion, you can contact me at playboardgamesbetter@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'm looking forward to you listening to me again in about a month. And check the website, playboardgamesbetter.com. I'm going to put up some videos on some other subjects related to playing games competitively, and you'll be able to watch for the next episode. Pretty soon we'll have RSS feeds, and once I have a couple of podcasts together, then we should appear in the iTunes store. Till then, you'll have to watch at the website, or the RSS feed, and perhaps on BoardGameGeek to catch future episodes as soon as they come out. The incidental music was performed by Joe DiMarino of HarpsichordInMotion.com. His website has harpsichord music and harpsichord performances. It is also available to teach harpsichord.